Hello and welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by Canadian production designer and art director from projects like Star Trek Discovery and What We Do in the Shadows, and more recently, The Umbrella Academy, Mark Steele. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Mark.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So in your last year of high school, you did a co-op program at a community cable television station. How did having that opportunity to work early on affect your perception of the industry and what you wanted to do?
Well, I mean, it was a sort of a different time, and it really was sort of maybe as far away from what I'm doing now as you could have been. But I think at that time in my, you know, entree into media in the form that it was available to us at that time as a young person, it kind of sort of really taught me about how you have to work within the sort of limitations of the medium and try to sort of push the boundaries and get the most out of the form that you're working in, which I found really kind of a fun challenge. There's a part of me that is very sort of geared towards the challenge of putting something on the screen in spite of all of the various logistics, and just I think having the challenge of putting an image or an idea forward inside of a very defined medium, which is what I've been continuing to do. And as I've gotten from that point to now, I've found as you build the skills, it's like adding more and more detail, more and more production value. All of those things kind of goes back to that early days when I was, you know, sitting in a local TV station doing like high school interviews. And it's like, you start going, well, how can we make this more interesting? Like, what can we add to this format? You know, and it became things like camera movements and shots. It also sort of introduced me to that potential of how you communicate visually, how the message is delivered in a composition. You know, really actually was an amazing experience to be able to just be sort of put in charge of a bunch of cameras and just go for it in a time when I walked in, I had no idea really how it got done. So getting that sort of immersive experience, I think really started to focus how I viewed content. And then from there, I thought I would be a director. That was sort of what I thought I would do. And I went to, you know, to RTA with that in mind. And it was kind of a bit funny. I mean, it's not to speak ill of the school. I love my old school. But at that time, actually, the equipment we were using at my local TV station was a little more advanced than what the school had. So I had to kind of find another challenge to sort of bring a production value standard to what I was trying to do in school, in spite of the fact that I'd used other stuff. I could now sort of figure out, oh, how do I get the same level with a different set of systems? And I think those are kind of really important lessons to understand how to maximize the potential of the situation you're given. Because I think in every form of production, that's really the sort of goal we're all doing, right? We're all trying to get the maximum production value, the maximum effect, in opposition or with the challenges of all the other limits that you put on with budget or time or equipment or personnel, right? So it was a really early immersion into that experience.
For sure, yeah. So you did mention that you studied radio and television arts at Ryerson and you had an interest in directing. So how was your experience at university, and is there anything that you learned there that you found valuable in your career today?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a time for me to really try to understand what my particular interest was in all of the medium. And, you know, I did a little bit of television. I was really much more oriented towards sort of television production and three-camera television production. And you had to do a lot of other electives. So I did film and did a little bit of single camera. And, you know, it was also a time for me to sort of mature a little bit. I mean, it was a sort of a safe place to try stuff. I wouldn't say I knew exactly what I wanted to do, but I kind of gravitated to being in a leadership role amongst my peers when it came to projects. And I think the biggest lesson I learned was in my final year was a program called Acting and Directing, where we would write a script and we would be in groups. Someone would be the writer. The rest of us would be performers, but we also had production role. And I was the producer. And I, you know, was also a third-year university student and of an age, so I wasn't maybe totally on the ball. And I had to really recognize the value of the collaboration. And I was a little bit of trouble. I was actually, I think there were some complaints about my producing. And I realized that I had to pull up my bootstraps and really join this group and play my role and support the project. And my prof at that time took me aside. He said, listen, you know, you can try to be popular if you want, or you can try to work at being effective. And if you don't work at being effective, you're never going to be popular, you know, and this is your moment. You need to put aside being fun guy and really do what you need to do and be part of this. And actually that stuck with me. I've used that moment many times when I've sort of measured my role in a group. And over time, I've recognized that the collaborative aspect of this job or this career is the key. And mastering the ability to be a collaborator is what is going to give you the most amount of success. You know, and that's sort of been one of my mantras in terms of how I go out in the world. And that was sort of a lesson I learned at the end of being in university for a few years. And because there's really nothing about what I actually studied that I actually ended up doing. There was no production design program in my course. But it also connected me with a lot of peers, and a few of them got me into film through a different route.
Right.
That's how I ended up where I am now, or the beginning step.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot that you learn from a program technically, but I think it's sometimes some of those life-changing moments or just things that you realize that you didn't necessarily even knew was part of, you know, your area of interest that you end up taking with you.
You know, the experience of learning how to collaborate, learning how to participate, learning how to work with other people's ideas, learning how to get other people on board with your idea. You know, those were the kind of the working methods of all of the program that I was in, and I'm sure as you are. And that experience really kind of woke you up to that, really made you understand that people depend on you, but also, you know, you need people to kind of be inspired by what you are doing too, if you really want to get a result. And that was kind of like a safe place to do that too. Like the stakes weren't as high, you know, it wasn't like I'm not going to get fired, but I almost got fired. I mean, I almost got fired out of my class because everybody was like, hey, you know, where is he? You know, that kind of thing. And you realize, wait a second, this is what we need to do. We need to work together to make this thing happen. And, you know, not to brag, but I got an A and I passed. You know, I did it. I did all right. But it's a great experience that way.
Yeah, for sure. That totally makes sense. So afterwards, you started working in set decoration and props. So how did doing this work lead you down the path that you're currently on?
Well, I mean, while I was at Ryerson, one of my classmates was somebody who was working in Toronto in the summers as a set dresser on programs, TV shows that were being shot at the time. And after we graduated, he kind of amped it up and kept doing that. And he kind of got me into set decoration, set dressing. At that time, there were several different unions in the city. There was the CBC, which was producing a lot of things. So I kind of found myself in a community. And at that time, too, and early on, you sort of did things differently, maybe than you did in a bigger union time that we're in now. So I was able to sort of try out different stuff. You know, I was able to do a lot of different projects. And I found myself eventually at the CBC working on things like Kids in the Hall and shows like that. And the really interesting thing about that format, which I think is not as heavily produced now as it used to be, but at that time, like a variety show or a sketch comedy show, you were doing enormous amounts of sets. And it was like this sort of university of set design. It was almost like theater. Like we would do about 400 sets in a season of Kids in the Hall. These little three-walled sets, or we would do 16mm shoots, or we would do video stuff, live audience stuff. Like, so it was all kinds of different forms of the medium again. And now I was behind the camera, but I wasn't directing, but I was also understanding how what we did contributed to story and contributed to sort of the whole overall look of a project. So at that time, you sort of basically start to connect with the process on all those different levels. And you start to sort of, as you move through the ranks of being in set decoration, as your shows get bigger, you start to play a much bigger role in how the relationship with production design or the art department, in some cases, the director, the set decorator becomes a pretty pivotal department and department head in the creative. So I spent 15 years or so working into being a set decorator and then starting to sort of be at the table with the creative more closely. And basically by the time I sort of stepped into the role of an art director, I had done a lot of the jobs that I would be asking other people to do. And I think that experience, it gave me a much closer understanding of everybody's abilities and everyone's capabilities on a project, which I think really made the communication, which is another key component, more effective in terms of how I would deliver art direction. So it's a funny department in the sense that it kind of is the last line. It's the one that takes you to the goal line. The last layer of every set is the decoration, you know, before it goes to camera. Many times you can't even finish your job as the decorator until the camera arrives. When the director and the DOP show up on the location or whatever, and they tell you which way they're pointing the camera, and you have to move everything out of the way so they can put the camera where it needs to go, like you are actually sort of the last hand that sort of touches the set. So being in that position, you started to really understand how important it is to be connected to the start of the idea before it ends up in that moment. And that was always really interesting to me. So I was always kind of swimming upstream from my position, really sort of understand more about where we're going with designs, what are the concepts that are coming up, how are those concepts being organized and developed and delivered, where are they in that process, and when can I get my 2 cents? And that just sort of put me in those meetings and just kind of kept going from there. So now I'm at the other end. I'm the one that's the first point. And I really have a deep amount of respect for everybody that is waiting for me to give them the information they need to do their jobs. So that's the result of that.
That totally makes sense. So kind of going off of that, how do you work collaboratively with the directors and cinematographers to help achieve their visual and stylistic goals for the project while maintaining your personal taste and style?
Well, I think every project is about a relationship, and it's about everybody sort of beginning. We start in a process of really kind of understanding everyone's particular vision. And I think we spent a lot of time as a group, myself with the producers, showrunners, writer, the director of photography, director in many cases. Television is a little different when you do series. The directors are usually a guest. Oftentimes, if you start a series, the first director has some creative input in the design, but typically it's really a relationship with the showrunners and producers that I have. But nevertheless, everybody is invited. So we spend a lot of time with the script and just really talk about what we think we see in this particular world, what styles we're all. And we spend that early phase building a consensus, a visual consensus. And my job would be a lot of times to articulate it, whether I do that with visuals or with illustration or a lot of conversation or references and things. We build some sort of look together. And it's always done with everyone's ability to be inclusive. So organically, we start to understand what everyone's after. It's not been my experience to be in conflict with other people's vision. It's usually much more about us all finding a sort of synthesis. What I also have to do is really understand how the different disciplines, especially with photography, with the director and with the cinematographer, how they choose to sort of document and how they want to shoot, what formats, all those things. So a lot of my job is accommodating the camera, accommodating their particular approach, accommodating the lens. And if I don't take that into account, nothing I do exists anyways. Like if they can't shoot it, if they can't put the camera in the room, then what I've done doesn't matter. This doesn't exist. So there's a kind of constant sort of negotiation with the requirements mechanically. Does the walls open up? Can we put a crane through this door? Can you put this on a riser for me? Can you take it off a riser? Like, that's all a sort of integral part of the design.
For sure. So kind of going off of that, because obviously production design is something that affects everyone. So what do you have to consider when it comes to functionality for the other departments when you're designing sets, but also when you're scouting spaces and creating that world?
Yeah, I mean, I think it sort of comes down to storytelling always, right? It's always about what are the scenes about? You know, what is the moment about? Because a lot of times what I need to do might occupy an enormous space with a certain quality to it that has a very large frame and has a certain light source that's either studio or a location. And that's all discussed as part of the sort of overall director's vision. And in that moment, we put that filter on and we say, okay, well, we're looking for this thing. We're looking for this emotion moment. We're looking for the big space with the small scene, or we go through that list. But a lot of times there's the small moments. There's like this understanding this is a 2-shot or a small conversation, and we want to keep it tight. We want to create a mood. We want to create an emotion around the character. So all of those sort of parts are discussed. And a lot of times I spend a lot of time with the director once we get into production talking about what scenes require what kinds of spaces and how those spaces reflect the emotion of the scene. And then how do we achieve that technically? And that's oftentimes understanding, you know, whether we can play a scene in a certain type of space and do all the things the camera needs to do. And a lot of times if you're on a bigger budget project and you can build that space, then every step of the way is custom to that. If it's a location, then it's really about finding that opportunity. And a lot of times, I spend a lot of time scouting with the directors and cinematographers and producers where we go to spaces and we're looking for that emotional connection. We're looking for this will work and we can get the camera in here and we can light this building from outside or inside or whatever we have to do. Everything always comes back to the storytelling. It's always, what are we trying to achieve? And can we achieve it? And is there a limitation to this particular idea that is worth overcoming? Like, if we really love this particular space, but it's going to be hell on everybody to get inside it, or it's going to be super complicated to build, or it's going to take a long time, we always are measuring the value of the story impact and its enhancement, right? And so my particular taste or my particular idea might be to sort of hold the line on a standard of what we've all agreed to. You know, if we've all agreed that it's really important to always have depth or a certain sort of symmetrical frame or some concept that we've all agreed we really want to do, my job is to kind of continue to sort of find and hold the moments and spaces and designs that refer back to that original idea. Because a lot of times, you know, especially on a TV series, everyone gets busy and there's like two units going, and you're trying to sort of maintain a certain continuity of style and look. And everybody is very committed to it. But at times it's also like they're relying on me to sort of be out in front of it because, you know, everybody gets busy and then I'm the one that's scouting and I'm leading us back to the idea and saying, here's the options, here's the spaces, here's what we can do. So that becomes the sort of relationship and the sort of collaborative approach that we take.
That's great. So what do you, because you've talked a lot about story now, what are you thinking about when you're looking at breaking down a script? Like, what are you looking for as far as story and how that will affect your approach to the art direction or production design?
Well, I think some of the things that I was just talking about, I mean, when I'm reading a script and I'm reading scenes, I'm really thinking about it from shots. I mean, I'm thinking about coverage. I'm thinking about blocking. I'm thinking about what is the energy of the scene and what kind of space do I need to create or provide that allows the scene to breathe or expand or move in the way that it's written? So oftentimes, you know, you'll read a scene about like two people intersecting in a moment, you know, and it's like, how do we create a space to make that most dynamic? As an example, I just read a script the other day, like two people meet in a hallway. One of them doesn't recognize the other one. One of them's going somewhere. So I'm designing a space that, you know, can we make this intersection happen on a different vector? Can someone come down into the space and meet, or can they do it on a stair? Can someone cross frame? Can they walk? You know, like you just start to sort of play with the various vectors that you could follow to intersect. And then how does that fit into the design or the continuity of everything else that you're doing? So I'm always sort of like got this little miniature 3D version of the movie in my head when I'm reading it. And I sort of start to think, okay, now what would be an interesting frame? If they're standing in a doorway talking, okay, that's cool. Well, what's behind them then? Do we want to see depth? Do we want to see frames within frames? Do we want to see backlight? And then you start to recognize from, you know, working with cinematographers and understanding kind of the nature of their needs, you start to build in moments that will enhance the shots that you know that eventually we'll find, you know. And what ends up happening is when the design comes down to the directors and to the cinematographers to look at, they start to find the shots in the volume that I present. Here's the plan of the set. And they start to look at, I can put the camera here, I can put the camera there. So I try to have a lot of that there for them to find. And then oftentimes they find something they need. And that's when I get it back and we make a change, right? But I'm always thinking about it in terms of the big and small moments as well, you know?
Right.
The close-ups and the big wides. So that you're always sort of thinking, where is the composition going to land and what's going to be interesting to look at?
That's fascinating. It seems like a lot of your job is about providing opportunities for the rest of the crew to do their jobs to the most effective degree.
100%. I mean, that's the nature of this. I mean, we're all trying to bring a contribution to this. And I think that really the great shows and the great moments and the best stuff and the things I've been able to be part of and witness and the things that I've been in charge of, the greatest moments are is when everyone has a chance to do their absolute best in their piece of it and that nobody's particular contribution eclipses another's or creates a difficulty that someone else can't surmount. That's the sort of the ultimate success of the project is that everyone can be enthused, everyone can participate, everyone can bring their piece and nobody's sort of standing in their way. And that's what you see on the screen when you see really great stuff, you know?
Right.
Is that everybody got it right. You know, everybody figured out how to schedule it, figured out how to make the time for everyone to make the best element of their contribution. And that's why it's amazing.
That completely makes sense. But it's interesting to hear that, I mean, obviously when you see something great, you assume that everyone is doing their best. But it's interesting to hear how you have to think about each role of the production when you're considering a space and how to put it together. So kind of going off of some of the exciting parts of making something great, what are your favorite parts about working as a production designer?
Well, I mean, I think being this sort of through line for the idea and being able to sort of really feed off of everybody's energy and contribution. I mean, that to me is really when it's the most thrilling and fun, was when everybody gets very enthusiastic about the project from their contribution. That's when a really great creative sort of energy happens. And for me, that's my favorite part, is when we're all sort of just completely engaged in making something really, really cool. And we're all really excited about our parts in it. And that comes from really having a lot of respect and trust that the people that you've hired and the people that you're working with all have something to offer. And when I can sort of be the person that lays out the plan and we all kind of go, cool, let's get on it, and this sort of rhythm and the hum of it all starts. And that for me is the best part, is that watching everybody be the best they can be at what they do. Like working with amazing, talented craftspeople that actually are making wonderful art right there in front of me because I asked them to make this piece of art and they thought it was a great idea. And now they're doing this amazing thing. Like that is so thrilling, to be sort of playing a role of convening all of these talents. So I really enjoy that part. And it's also just fun to just make believe, right? Just make it up and do it. I mean, that's the ultimate childhood dream, right? Just to make a fort and a whole bunch of people are going to build it and we can walk around and it's going to be cool, you know?
Very big forts now.
We've gotten a little bigger, but yes, even the small ones, there's all kinds of moments of satisfaction. I mean, even, you know, a hero prop or watching somebody sit down beside that one graphic that we made, that really cool poster, and now it's in the shot and we're all can see it. Like that's a real thrill because we were timing it. We're hoping that, you know, we'll find the blocking and we'll be able to put that thing there. And yay, we saw it. Isn't it amazing? It looks great. You know, that's all a big thrill.
Yeah, it's awesome. So in the newest season of Umbrella Academy, there is an element of time travel and you're having to create a period environment. Could you talk maybe a bit about what are some of the exciting parts about working on creating a period environment?
Well, I think, you know, certainly the fun part of any period project is to really do a deep dive into the era. It's like a big scavenger hunt, right? It's like, where is it? What building still has that artifact or has that architecture and preserved? Where are all the sort of elements that are, you know, available to us to sort of bring in? And then it becomes like, okay, what's missing? What are the missing pieces? And then it's like, how are we going to make them? You know, and it's kind of fun. I mean, we ended up on another show, which I'm not going to say what show it is, but I have had to like rebuild things that just don't exist anymore. You know, like materials that don't exist anymore, types of plastic objects that we all remember or we've seen photos from the times, and you suddenly realize, well, that just isn't anywhere, but we need it. So now you're kind of going into the sort of architectural archaeology, you know, it's like, well, we're going to have to build this form or this object. And that's really fun. I mean, that kind of stuff to me is when we can sort of nail it. And I also really enjoy like the graphic design elements from periods. Like it's just a really great moment to sort of explore history of different sorts of design and get back into a little more of an analog, a little more of a saturated world where right now we don't have that sort of, I don't feel we have that connection so much. When you realize at different time periods, things that we take for granted actually required a lot of craftsmanship. Things were done by hand, you know, windows were painted with logos on them. Like all of those fun details are really kind of the thrill of doing period. And, you know, when it clicks and you've got it right and it all shows up and you actually stand on set and look around and kind of go, this is crazy. Like this is now, yeah, like we've gone back in time. You know, that's the thrill.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds incredible. So do you have any advice for student filmmakers that really need to get the most bang for their buck when it comes to production design? I mean, obviously that's something that is always going to be the case. You always want to get the most bang for your buck, but as students, we definitely have a smaller buck to work with. What advice would you have for people working on a smaller budget?
Well, I think that never changes. You know, budgets get bigger, but they're never big enough. Probably a good way to look at it is to try to do fewer things well than to do everything, you know, on a sort of broad spectrum. Like, you know, choose the elements that you feel support the story, or choose stories that are within reach of the elements that you think you can do. Like there's kind of a negotiation there. But if you got like $100 and you want to build a spaceship, then if your story's about it being a cardboard box, that's okay. But if you're trying to convince everybody that this is the Enterprise or some Battlestar Galactica or something, then maybe you want to think twice about what part of the story you want to tell. Like, do you want to tell all of the scope, or do you want to focus on a key detail that provides the right emotional tone for what you're trying to do? You know, you could be in a spaceship, but maybe you don't need to be in a big set. You need to be in a smaller representation. And when you scale it down, think about what are those key sort of emotional triggers that I'm going to look at and recognize the setting. Because a lot of times, I think you don't have to necessarily try to be super impressive with your design. You just have to be the right tone for the story that you're trying to tell or the scene that you're trying to shoot, right? I mean, there's definitely, you know, moments where the design is the character. But a lot of times, the design is simply there to really provide that offset or the contrast or the tone. And just decide, what is the tone? Sometimes it's a color, you know? What color should be behind me? What texture would look interesting in the frame? Where should the light come from, and what should diffuse it? And then that's all the shot needs. It doesn't need a lot more than that. So it's just really finding that moment, and then do that within your means. Make that expression inside of your means. I think that's far more effective. You know, the flip side of overstepping your abilities is creating a distraction. And if your design is distracting, then it's going to take away from your story. It's going to take away from performance. So you want to be really conscious of that. You don't want to do something for the sake of doing it because you think it should be there, and then realize you shouldn't have really put it there because it kind of didn't look good, and then made everyone just look at that instead of look at the actor or whatever.
Right.
And then those are easy decisions to make at any budget level.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's great advice. Thank you. So where do you personally go to find inspiration for your work?
Well, I don't know, honestly. I mean, it starts out with research. It starts out with, I think a lot of times, you know, we're all working from a cultural influence. You know, we've all been immersed in different mediums. You know, we all have our own playlists. And a lot of times, you know, when someone gives me a script and they sort of will pitch it, they'll say, well, this is like this. You know, like I've said this before, but one of the first things I heard about Umbrella Academy, the first season, was this, it's the Royal Tenenbaums meets the X-Men. Like, that's the elevator pitch, right? So when you hear those words, put those two things immediately, it sort of opens the vault of, you know, Wes Anderson and Marvel. So you're kind of accessing this stuff. And then you start thinking, well, what can we do that's different? What are the things about those two ideas that we really like? What's the emotional impact? And then we start to tailor everything to that. And then I'll start to sort of just try to find how to recontextualize other experiences or imagery. In the case of like an interior, like we'll sort of go down this, into the mood world. So we'll look at, you know, images of different environments based on character. You know, sometimes it's like one thing, like you'll sort of see an object, like a vase, like just something with the color and the shape of it. And you kind of go, you know, I think this character would love this. And then suddenly you're all looking at it and you might sort of say, well, let's just build on that. What does that thing say about this character? And then it leads you down a path and you start to find objects or rooms or spaces that are all kind of feeding into it. You know, honestly, I don't even know how to define where it comes from. You know,
it's just different every time.
It's different every time. I mean, you know, it's funny. I'm not very good at archiving. So it's like a lot of times I'm like, oh yeah, there was this picture I saw. Or on this other show, we did this thing and there was this room or this thing or this location. So I'll spend some time like going through old hard drives, trying to go like, where was that place? I remember that window at the top of the stairs. Like I'll go through some kind of strange trance where I'm just trying to go back through my brain and find all these things I saw and put them on back into a new context. So it's kind of how it works. I don't know.
It's mental mapping.
Yeah, I wish I could say, well, I use the such and such method. With the,
no.
You know, I use the encyclopedia of production design and I go to the chapter on superheroes. You know, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, no, that's completely reasonable. It's a hard question to answer. Yeah. But I appreciate you trying.
Thank
certainly.
You. Excuse me. I appreciate that too. I mean, I've been asked it before and it's sort of like, you know, what do you do in your spare time to be inspired? I don't know. A lot of times I just do what everyone else is doing, or I just sort of, I have like a photographic memory. So there are times like I'll see something, it'll stick in my head, and now I use my phone more. So like if I walk across a floor and I go, oh, this tile, I've got all these pictures on my phone. But as again, it's about the archiving problem, because, you know, the cloud has like 8,000 pictures now. It's just like, yeah, I was at this restaurant. I remember I took a picture of the bathroom because it was so cool. And then I
than having to go and find it.
They trying to find that picture. So, yeah. You know, but anyway.
That's fair. All right, I'm going to ask you one more question before I open it up to a few of my friends. And that is, what advice would you give to someone who's just starting their career now and is aspiring to be in your position one day?
Well, I mean, obviously, if we're talking about finishing school and, you know, it's about finding a way to make contact with the industry. And I think the first thing would be is to obviously to just focus on your mastering your chops, like your skill. What is your thing? Are you an illustrator? Are you a photographer? You know, what's your visual communication style? And just keep polishing that to a place that you're happy with it, that you want to put it out there. But then it's like connect to the industry, you know, connect by doing things like interning or whatever. I mean, in terms of the practical approach to the production design world of Toronto and most of North America, there's the guild systems here. And we have the DGC in Toronto, which is Directors Guild of Canada Ontario chapter, which has an apprenticeship program, which starts with a portfolio. And I've sat on many of these screening committees where, you know, I've met young people who had just finished school. Actually, one of my trainees last year on Umbrella was literally, she had to go back and graduate a month into working with us. But it's just building your portfolio and showing who you are and then making those inroads and building your network. I mean, that's the fundamental part of it. Once you kind of make that connection, it's also paying attention to sort of as much of the process as you can and understanding, building an understanding of how you might fit in, you know, and then make your move. Like say, listen, I got this thing I can do. I think it could help. And usually I find there's always like this moment where we need someone that can do this thing. It's like, there's this new idea we have to do, or we have to do this sketch, or we need this drawing of this set, or we need research for this thing. Where's this material? Like there's always a place. And if you're open and you're listening and you're participating in the whole process and paying attention to what everyone else is doing around you, at some point you notice, wait a second, I have something here I can offer. And suddenly people will go, okay. And that's how it kind of works. That's sort of how it worked for me. And that's how I see it working. I think it's just, it's making that connection. It's getting inside the door with through an apprenticeship or through production assisting or something. If you're a PA, go down the hall, see what the sets people do. Go out, you know, go check out the paint shop, go in to see what the carpenters are doing. Like just really kind of just make yourself known. And then sooner or later, someone will go, yeah, I remember that PA was talking to me and you know, they're great. You know, maybe they can come and build this thing with us or do this project. And eventually you get that traction. I mean, I have a lot of Ryerson graduates come through from interior design, film studies, somewhat architecture. They approach the guild, they go through the trainee apprentice program, and then I get emails and we're always looking for somebody, or I know someone who's looking for somebody. So it's just breaking in and making those contacts.
For sure.
And have your chops ready so that when you have your moment, you can actually put your thing forward. You know, yeah, I do really great illustration, or I do this thing. And someone will go, yeah, great, do it now. And we'll pay you and make you do more of it.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. All right. Well, that's it for my questions, but I'm going to open it up now to a few of my friends for them to be able to ask you some questions.
Okay.
Just taking your advice about networking, if I wanted to submit work somewhere or like some graphic design or kind of dip my toe in the water, how do you suggest I get started? Like who do I track down? What's like the best way to kind of show my work to the best of my ability?
Well, I think in the formal sense for me, in the kind of level that I tend to work in now, it's mostly comes through the Directors Guild of Canada, which I'm sure you've heard of, the DGC, which has an actual apprenticeship program, which has a little entree pro where there's a online form and you fill out some stuff, you get some references, you submit your portfolio, and then twice a year or three times a year, they do these intake sessions where you kind of come in and you meet maybe six people from the art department in these like little sort of 5 minute speed dating sessions where we look at your portfolio and we go, that's cool, but you know, you need to maybe do more of something else. Or then we recommend like, you could be a trainee. And then once you get that status, you got to spend a bit of money. Like you have to pay an entrance fee and stuff like that. But it's not a lot of money. That's one way to sort of kind of make a direct connection. So I think it's worthwhile just to look at that website and look at the criteria and then measure what you've got and see if you've got enough stuff. The other side of that is, you know, connecting with the independent world and the non-union world. And I don't have a lot of advice about that, but I know it exists. I know there are people that do stuff and you might know peers or colleagues, but basically, anyone you know that might know somebody that knows somebody, you just got to let them know you're there and see if they need you. That's sort of how it works.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
I know you were talking before about how you didn't think at the beginning of your career you were going to end up in production design. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of film students that I've met at least have the same issue where we don't exactly know where we're going to fit in the future. Do you have any like tips or advice for finding your lane in the production world?
I think it kind of goes back to what I was saying about like, pick your thing. What's your sort of jam, right? Like, do you draw, do you paint, do you design? Are you just like a really kick-ass manager? Like, are you really great at logistics? Do you like budgets? Like, just find that particular skill, because there are, all the skills get used, and just polish that skill so that you have something to show somebody when you make contact. Because you may not walk in the job you think you're going to do, but to have that ability to show what you can do and prove it when you're in is kind of the key to that. But I mean, it's all a communication game, right? Especially with art direction and production design is a visual communication. So if you have some kind of visual communication method, that's the starting point, right? If you can show how you can illustrate, you can show how you can draft, or you can show how you can photograph, that gets people, at least it becomes the talking point, becomes a valuable commodity that you're offering. It doesn't mean that you have to do that forever. An example of that, I mean, I started switching in a cable TV studio, doing 3-camera interviews, and now I'm doing single camera major series art production design. It's not a straight line all the time. A lot of production designers that I work with come from another discipline in their past. They come from fine art, or they come from architecture, or they come from something else. Or they just come up through the ranks like I have. Like, I've come from, you know, set decoration. I took the long road in a sense. I mean, I did all the sort of other jobs before I kind of got to this job. But, you know, I think having that thing that defines you as a visual communicator is going to sort of give you that calling card. And then once you get in there, you realize, well, you know, like, actually I'm pretty good at art directing. You know, I'm better at organizing all of the people that need to do the art than maybe being the primary artist. And that's valid. I mean, artists need directing. Artists need organizing. Trust me. There's a whole bunch of people that can create stuff, but can't figure out how to get it off the table and out the door. And if you're that kind of person who understands that, that's valuable too. And if you can inspire, communicate, organize, and direct all of that effort, people are like, oh my God, you're a genius. It's like, we need you to come here because Stephanie knows how to make the phone ring at the place and then take the thing over there. Like, that's like amazing to people that are creative sometimes. And it's just like, you know, that's a key thing. You know, like I said, it doesn't really count if it doesn't make it to the camera. So, you know, being that person can get you there too.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Okay, so before we wrap this up, I did ask you to prepare 5 film recommendations. So I'm going to get you to share those with us now and talk a little bit about why you chose those films.
All right. Well, I have a tough time with this because I don't have like a running list. But for me, the films that always come up in my head when people talk about like, what is your favorite or what was the thing or whatever, it's usually the things that really impressed me at a formative time in my life or an early memory. So some of these are older ones, but one of the ones that always pops back in my head was a film called Brazil, which I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it was from the 80s with Terry Gilliam was the director. And Terry Gilliam, for me, was an early influence, right? He was one of the Monty Pythons and he was a director and he would make weird animations and he would make strange short films. And then he started making these wacko feature films with George Harrison from the Beatles. So there was a sort of aesthetic that became very influential for me. And Brazil was not a totally successful movie, I know, but it also had for me a deep connection in terms of an aesthetic style. And I think there's always like a little bit of Brazil somewhere in my head whenever I'm doing a set, you know, and I think it's sort of a shorthand for, you know, a bunch of us of a certain generation. So I don't know if you've seen it, but it's worth watching. It's a little bit long in the middle, but it's still worth watching. Also, The Shining, I don't know, it's just turned 40, that movie. But Stanley Kubrick, I mean, just about anything by Kubrick. But The Shining was great because it was a film, not just about what happens, but it's also like the set was the character. I mean, the hotel was a character. And for me, it sort of, again, I mean, it scared the crap out of me when I saw it. But also, I always go back to it again, aesthetically in my head, because compositionally, the use of the floor and the ceiling and the, you know, just the framing of that film and the sort of strange abilities to make a space have a characteristic and a tension is a thing I always come back to in my head too. Is like, what about this space? You know, what can we put into this space emotionally? And it's, I think, you know, it's a brilliant film. And Kubrick again for Dr. Strangelove, which you may have seen, I'm not sure, black and white film, but two reasons, well, many reasons for that film, but Ken Adam, production designer on that film, who also did a whole ton of James Bond in the 70s. There's an aesthetic to that film. I mean, Ken Adam is, like, for me, another hero of production design, just from a sort of a dramatic kind of kitschy way, but also just the sort of performances in that film. And again, Kubrick tends to sort of dominate a lot of the psyche of filmmaking. And another oldie, but I think I could never stop watching, is Casablanca. And I think it's kind of a weird cliche, but you should watch it for the design of it. You know, it's like a perfect movie in a kind of historical way. But the design is fantastic. Like the way the camera is sort of just witnessing, it's like theater to the max, like just the beautiful aesthetic of that to me. I actually watched it again recently and just went like, holy shit. Like, they probably did all of this in like a tiny lot, but it's just so, the depth and the layers and the angles and the light. It's just, I love it. It's just great. It's corny, but it's great, you know? And it's actually, to me, one of the great, perfect films. Does it influence me? Not really. I just really admire it. And then I'm a big fan of Korean movies. So I don't know, Old Boy is one of my favorites. It's the best one of the Vengeance trilogy for a lot of different reasons. The storyline is whack. The set pieces are just really cool and mind-blowing. And I'm a big fan of the texture of it and a lot of that world. There's just a really interesting kind of visual about it that I really dig. I love the wallpaper. I love wallpaper a lot. Like, I love pattern on pattern and stuff. So a lot of Korean stuff, there's some great, these interiors with these great patterns and color combinations. So those are my five.
Thank you so much for sharing those choices. I think they obviously make sense from a production design standpoint. And the ones that I've seen have all been great movies. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing the other ones. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing your time and your expertise and your experience with us. And thanks to those of you who ask questions. That is all for this episode of Film Kid Asks. Be sure to subscribe and feel free to follow us on Twitter and Instagram or join our Facebook group. New episodes come out every Saturday.